Greetings and welcome to the Net Positive Podcast. I am your host, Ted Flanagan. This week, I'm joined by my longstanding friend and colleague, Craig Perkins. Craig worked for the City of Santa Monica for many years, and for about the past 12 years, he's been the president and the executive director of the Energy Coalition, one of the leading nonprofits in California promoting energy efficiency and distributed energy solutions. Craig, welcome to the Net Positive Podcast. It's great to be here with you.
Great to be with you, Ted.
Craig, where were you born and raised?
I was born in Wichita, Kansas. Both of my parents were born and raised in Kansas, but they moved to California when I was less than 2 years old. So I didn't spend a whole lot of knowing time in Kansas, although we did a lot of road trips back there when I was a kid to visit relatives in the summer with no air conditioning.
Right, right. And did you move to Southern California when you came to, your parents came to California?
No, we moved to Sanger, California. It's a small farming community, 13 miles east of Fresno. And the reason being that that's where my grandmother had ended up. She was a elementary school teacher. And so that's my dad and mom and family planted themselves in Sanger, California. And that's where I grew up through high school. Went to college at UC Berkeley. So that was
What was Sanger like? I mean, it must have been a very small town.
Sanger was much less than 10,000 people at that time. And it was the major part of the economy was tree fruit and grapes. And just a really rich fruit growing surroundings. And
What did you like to do when you were a kid? What did you envision doing when you got older?
I didn't have any vision of what I wanted to do when I was older, but I had a lot of fun as a kid, in a small town, just basically, went to school, but then during the summer, which was great, basically, you got kicked out of the house in the morning and the parents said, okay, be back by dark. And so we did a lot of interaction with the other neighborhood kids. Yeah. There were still, vineyards like only a couple blocks away. When we first moved in to the house, there was a vacant lot across the street, which became my elementary school. And so just grew up in that Sanger small town environment. And that was my circle of friends and started to figure out what to do. The exciting thing was to drive into Fresno.
But then you went off to Berkeley, the big city life.
Went off to the big city, and that was quite a culture shock. But I was just, I was just thrilled to have that experience. Just fell right into it. The chaos and the sensory, stimulation of all sorts, and did great. I just really enjoyed my time at Berkeley.
I mean, Berkeley was a bastion of the hippie movement, wasn't it? Was that the People's Park era at Berkeley, or?
Yeah, I'm dating myself here, but I started school sort of right after the early 70s, right when a lot of that stuff had occurred, but it was going through this sort of new sort of, recalibration of between the hippies and the druggies and the community trying to, get to its new trajectory. And People's Park sort of had its last gasp of demonstrations at that point. So it was an exciting time.
And your major was sociology. What was that focus? And I know that led you off to South America.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I didn't declare a major until I absolutely had to, which was the start of my junior year. And based on what the courses that I had taken and sort of my general interests, which were pretty sort of broadly sort of liberal arts, humanities, I ended up deciding that sociology, was the best fit. And you have to choose an advisor. And I approached one of the sociology professors at the time who was still there, Harry Edwards, the guy who led the Olympic boycott, the 1968 Olympic boycott. And he was a fascinating guy, fascinating teacher. I took all his classes that he offered in sociology. And then that, led me to, interestingly, at that time, the UC system required a Spanish language proficiency. I had taken Spanish in high school, but I needed to take a couple of Spanish courses in order to satisfy that requirement. I decided to take Spanish. Had a couple of really great professors, one from Peru, one from Argentina, and I became very interested in Spanish. Had one of my former roommates had taken a trip to Mexico to sort of camp on beaches, and I said, as soon as I graduate, I'm going to take a trip to Mexico. And I did that. I kind of took a bus. Got on a bus, ended up in Guadalajara, hitchhiked around, for about a month and a half, came back and said, "This is really interesting. I wonder if there's some way I can save some money and take a more extended trip," which I did in the 1975, 76. Got on another bus and ended up, believe it or not, got as far as Bolivia before I ran out of money. And that was about 4.5 months, and I just really got the bug. I got the Latin American bug, came back, got some part-time jobs, and really figured out where I could go to graduate school related to Latin American studies. UCLA had a really good program, and that's where I ended up in an interdisciplinary program, in a master's program for Latin American studies, which then led to a joint political science Latin American Studies degree. I got a fellowship to spend 6 months in Peru studying agricultural policy, a very marketable skill. And got back, finished all my coursework, was working at UCLA in a really sort of bizarre job, going to the library, checking out 10 years worth of Latin American journals and indexing them for this bibliographic project. At the time, my to-be wife was working for the city of Beverly Hills. She decided that she wanted to get a master's in public administration. And being a professional student at that point, I said, "Sure, I'll tag along." Went to Cal State Dominguez Hills, got a was in that master's program and sent letters to 30 local governments in Southern California. Santa Monica was the only one that responded. Got a 2-month internship with Santa Monica that ended up being a 25-year career in city government. So, not Latin American studies focused, but you never know, sort of, the way your path is going to lead.
How would you describe that Latin American bug? What about the culture was of great interest?
I just became fascinated. I love the language, and I just love the cultures. And then, as it turned out, really really love the history and the politics, and the sort of the archaeology. And so it was a whole bunch of different stuff. Really gravitated more to, the politics, and the policy side of it, which I found fascinating. And yeah, and so it's kind of hard to, describe. You just connect with certain things, and you never know what those are going to be. And I just was just enthralled by the vastness and the richness of, Latin America as an area of study and area of travel.
I know that you worked at the city of Santa Monica for like 25 years, and you've been at the Energy Coalition now for, I don't know, another 13 or 14 years, right?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Have you found excuses to go back and to visit Latin America periodically?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I ended up marrying a woman who was born in Costa Rica, came here when she was 12, 13. And so there was that connection, and have gone back, and have actually, we're now working with an organization that consists of the 35 capital cities of the Americas, mostly in Latin America, and we're trying to come up with projects where we can work on both education as well as energy services in Latin America. And that's a work in progress, but I'm optimistic we're going to come up with some some specific linkages to, you know, our energy work.
Let's talk about Santa Monica. That's where you were when I met you. You had the greatest department. What was it? Environment and Public Works, I guess.
Exactly.
E&PW. And you're well known for your environmental leadership and really turned Santa Monica, I think, into probably the leading green city in Southern California. Isn't that probably fair to say?
It's all about timing and sort of being in the right spot at the right time. And I was fortunate in that regard. What do they say? Luck is the intersection of preparation and opportunity, something like that. And so I was, you know, so it was good luck on my part. But this would have been at it's really the birth of the whole concept of sustainability as a policy initiative. And I originally got hired in Santa Monica to work on the budget. So I was in the budget office, which was in the city manager's office, and I was pretty good at it, actually, within, you know, less than 3 years, because of turnover and sort of my sort of steep learning curve, I became the budget director for Santa Monica, believe it or not. So you never, you, and not much preparation in Latin American studies for that, but that, you know, something I really took to. And for a lot of reasons, the budget, you know, was moved to the finance department. The city manager basically said, hey, are you interested in opportunity in the public works department, being a sort of the administrative manager in public works? And I said, sure, I am, because, you know, it was really going from a staff sort of sitting down in the weeds job to being in a job where you're dealing with operations and sort of a lot of interesting different utility and other sorts of public works operations. And that really, as it ended up, became my sort of passion in terms of how we could improve not only operations, but we could sort of bring together all of these resource management areas into a more coherent whole from a standpoint of policy. And so, you know, it was my idea to create, let's bring together water conservation and energy conservation and hazardous materials and sort of all these other sort of different programs into an environmental programs division. Let's bring them all together and come up with a overarching policy vision for that. And my boss and the city manager said, okay, well, you know, put it together. If the council approves it, then you can do it. And they did, because at that point in time, we had a city council that was very progressive and very interested in being leaders in the area of environmental protection and environmental services. And so it was great. And we put together that division. I became the division manager and really thought a lot about how sustainability practices and policies could be integrated into day-to-day sort of operations and missions of solid waste and water and wastewater and facility maintenance and beach cleaning and all those things that we were able to have an impact on, and that department was in charge of.
And it makes a lot of sense. And I mean, what percentage of your time was going towards the sustainability stuff versus, I mean, being the director of public works alone is a big job. You know, you're running all of the streets and the, like you said, the water utilities, and well, you got all sorts of responsibilities. So what percentage was what I call the sexy environmental stuff versus the, you know, sort of the meat and potatoes of public works?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I like to describe I used to describe my job as I'm in charge of everything that can break in the city of Santa Monica, and literally break. I mean, you know, you have water lines, you know, blowing up and creating, you know, 20 foot, sort of sinkholes and stuff like that. But I would say that, you know, on an average basis, you know, it was definitely, you know, sort of less than 20%, maybe more in the 10 to 15% range. But the good news is that we were able to draft and adopt a lot of policy statements and targets, goals and targets, which really then define a lot of the activities of those departments. So it's not so much about, you know, you put it in a separate compartment, is how do you integrate that into the way you do business, right? And that's always the challenge. It's easy to say, it's hard to do. And I think that's where we made a lot of progress and had success in Santa Monica.
I think that model is a really good one. I think about the city of Glendale where I live right now, and I we have a fledgling office of sustainability. We got a large public works operation going on, and there really is very little coordination. So you really, I think, did create an exciting model. Let's fast forward a little bit, and you and I both knew a guy named John Phillips, who's passed away, but kind of a quacky guy, an interesting guy. His dad had run a large mechanical engineering firm, and John just thought that big buildings only operated as well as the operators operated them. It wasn't just a matter of putting a lot of technology in, but you needed to couple technology with the behavior, with the operational skills. When did you meet John? Because I know early off, this is before I worked with John, he had the Regional Energy and Energy Efficiency Initiative, REEI, and that was, I think, just originally the city of Irvine and the city of Santa Monica.
Right. Yeah, he was a fascinating guy. Could drive you nuts at one moment and then do something really inspiring in the next moment. He is that sort of person, as you know. I first met John. This is a funny story. I was the environmental programs manager in Santa Monica, and the mayor at the time had met John at some meeting or conference, and he John gave him his pitch of how the energy world needed to change, and he thought it was interesting. So he contacted the city manager of Santa Monica, said, "I got this guy I want to bring up there to meet with you." Because he's got some really interesting ideas on energy and what Santa Monica may be able to do. And so the city manager says, "Okay, yeah, we'll set up a meeting." He calls me up and he says, "Craig, I want you to come to this meeting. This guy's going to come in and talk about energy stuff. And, you know, if there's any follow-up, you know, I want you to take care of it." So I go to the meeting, and John, you know, makes his impassioned sort of pitch about the energy world looks like and where it needs to go and what Santa Monica can do, what he's doing in Irvine. And he ends the meeting and he leaves, and I'm sitting there with the city manager, and the mayor was there. And so the mayor and John leave. The city manager turns to me and says, "Do you know what he was talking about?" And I said, yeah, John, the city manager's name is also John. I said, "Yeah, John, I think there's some stuff there that we can follow up on. So I'll do that and I'll keep you posted." And that led to us, you know, becoming one of those partners with Irvine. And so that was really the start of it. So John Phillips is always one of those guys that he wasn't really good in the execution of stuff, but he's really good in the vision statement of stuff. And I'm really good in the execution of stuff, so that was a good partnership, I think.
And he really tried to stir it up. I mean, to kind of put it really. I mean, you take if you have a city, he would say let's define a subset of that city, an energy district, and then let's just see if we can't sort of dump a lot of resources and put a lot of focus on that and create a lot of community organizing and to see whether we could really create better energy savings than the utility programs. And I think he proved that out really, really effectively.
No, I agree. And that, you know, I refer to that as the need for disruption. Nothing advances in this world without disruption. And I think that looking back on sort of, you know, my time in Santa Monica, my time with the Energy Coalition, and sort of what, you know, so what I think about where things need to go, It really is about sort of questioning those prevailing assumptions. We can't do it the way we've done it, because that's the reason that we're in the pickle we're in, right? So you got to figure out different ways to do things, which is going to require some people being unhappy, and is also going to require significant change or disruption to the status quo and the systems and processes. And so, yeah, John was that sort of thinker. He was comfortable with that, and I've always been comfortable with that as well. Some people are very uncomfortable with that, as you know, Ted. But that is exactly what history teaches us. There was a book I read in undergraduate time that Thomas Kuhn, the theory of structural the structure of scientific revolutions, or something like that. I can't remember the time, but it really talks about how we are in this. Human beings a lot of times are in this sort of delusion that change occurs very slowly and very incrementally, when actually, if you look at historical change, particularly in terms of technological change, it's very swift and it's very disruptive. And, and it's sort of like, it's only in the perspective of looking back that you realize, how much change, how quickly. And I think that's where we are right now in terms of energy, quite frankly, in terms of the distributed energy resource technology, solar storage, energy management, as well as electrification of transportation, electrification of systems and equipment and appliances. And I think that looking back, we're going to not believe how quickly things change when they started changing.
The Malcolm Gladwell, the tipping point, kind of it's not a linear deal, is it? All of a sudden,
it's not. And I think that, just looking at one example of that would be, let's just look at electric vehicles. And, there's categories of vehicles. You've got, light duty, medium duty, heavy duty. So let's just talk about the light duty and the medium duty. Heavy duty has had some other issues, but I'm pretty confident. I mean, we have in California right now, I think we just hit like 1 million electric vehicles, right? And that's out of, I don't know, 10, more than 10 million vehicles. But there's now a target that by 2035, every new vehicle in California that's purchased has to be electric. Well, I'm predicting that it's going to be much sooner than that. And that, we're already at the tipping point. Because, as you know, because you drive an electric vehicle, I drive an electric vehicle, they are vastly superior in terms of performance to an internal combustion vehicle. The only issue is, the range and the charging. How you deal with the range, how the range needs to improve, or how you need to manage with the range, and then how you charge the vehicle. Those problems are going to be solved in less than 10 years. And so I'm pretty confident that this is going to be the standard, and that internal combustion engine vehicles will become the dinosaurs more quickly than we know. But it's going to imagine this. I mean, you go to an intersection and there's a gas station on each corner right now. And, so how much of our infrastructure, how much of sort of our land use patterns are devoted to sort of gasoline and diesel powered vehicles, right? And then how that's going to change or modify on the basis of electric powered vehicles. And it's going to be extraordinary. I mean, it's going to be, we'll figure it out, but it's just going to be this extraordinary disruption, of land use and economic patterns.
Well, you left Santa Monica after you retired after 16 or 17 years in that one role. And then you shifted over to the Energy Coalition, and they had the Energy Coalition, that initial partnership, that REEI grew to the Six Cities Energy Project. It grew to the Community Energy Partnership with 10 cities. And then you came in and that model, that partnership, that notion of working with local governments, working with NGOs within a city, kind of creating an acupressure within the city. That model took root, and Edison started, Southern California Edison, the utility, started promoting partnerships. And how many partnerships do we end up with in the state? There was dozens of them, weren't there?
Yeah, there were literally dozens and dozens in Northern and Southern California. And so the Energy Coalition was a catalyst for that. And before I was there, but I know that you were involved in that, a lot of other people, and it was adopted by the the utilities, investor-owned utilities, because it was a good model for partnership with a very important customer segment for them, and also a very critical connection to communities within their service territories. Now, those and so those partnerships achieved a lot of really great stuff. Now, I won't say that they were sort of perfectly managed and organized, but it opened the door, I think, to participation by local governments in understanding, in a better understanding and management of not only their energy use, but their energy opportunities. I think that's what was critically important. The other thing that was critically important along those lines was the ERA program, the Energy Efficiency Community Block Grant programs, which were after the 2008 economic meltdown. And so those came in 2009, 2010, and those were direct grants to cities and counties to do energy projects, energy efficiency, you know, solar, other, you know, other, you know, eligible energy projects. And for the first time, you know, a lot of these cities and counties, I know because we worked with them, were actually getting their aha moment. Yeah, this is a big part of our ongoing sort of carrying costs. And this is a big part of our environmental footprint. And you know, and this is a big part of how we can positively impact, you know, air quality and sort of reliability and safety issues within our community. And so I think that has just grown from both the local government partnerships, the ERA program, and now through the regional energy networks in California, which are managed by consortia of local governments.
And you have been running the SoCal REN, or running the municipal operations of the SoCal REN now for 5, 6, 7 years, something like that?
The Southern California Regional Energy Network, it started in 2013. And since then, the Energy Coalition has been responsible for the public, all the public sector programs affiliated with that, as well as some of the other programs. And I'm proud to say that this is one of my moments of successful disruption. The Energy Coalition actually played a key role in supporting and advocating for the formation of regional energy networks at the Public Utilities Commission. We actually paid for the utility attorney to write up, you know, the motion, you know, to create them, and really helped with that advocacy, which was successful. And so they were allowed for the first time, California energy efficiency funding was allowed to be administered by a non-utility. And those were these regional energy networks, the local governments. And so LA County was the champion in Southern California to turn in that application. And we've been working with LA County on the implementation of a lot of those REN programs since then.
What else are you excited about at the Energy Coalition? What other projects are you keen on talking about?
Well, I guess the most notable one, which we're really keen on, is our Advanced Energy Community Project, which is the Bassett Avocado Advanced Energy Community Project, which is received funding through the California Energy Commission and is focused on creating energy opportunities for residents of disadvantaged census tracts, disadvantaged communities. And this is an unincorporated LA County. And so what are some of the goals of the project? Create a community solar resources for, you know, some of those community participants. Create an advanced energy home pilot for 50 single family homes owned by low income qualified individuals in the community. Have a couple of electric vehicle vans for ride sharing and carpooling. Build an energy resilience hub at a county park, which would be standalone microgrid to provide sort of emergency services, energy, heat, cooling center refuge, and other sorts of, you know, services. And then finally, do with those 50, those 50 homes, those 50 advanced energy homes, create rooftop solar, battery storage, as well as retrofit of at least a heat pump water heater, electric from gas to electric heat pump water heater, and do a simulation of a customer energy management platform where what if a customer had solar and storage and was able to manage their output and their demand, was able to get a value within the market, you know, and get a benefit, an economic benefit from how they manage those resources on their property in order to make them a part of this energy transformation that's occurring. Because a lot of what you hear of, Ted, and this is why I'm excited about this project, is two things: that there are customer segments and communities that are being left behind in this energy revolution that's going on right now. And also that electrification could have a negative impact on energy affordability for these customers. So there's a lot about making sure that everyone is participating in the changes and that there is not a negative impact on the affordability of energy to those who aren't able, who are least able to accommodate it. And so I think that there's some innovative approaches and models for how the pricing and the markets can be restructured to create incentives and positive impacts on those customer groups. There's a lot of restructuring that needs to occur in everything from sort of how we support rooftop solar and battery storage for customers, for those targeted customers, to how the system prices, you know, the output from those decentralized solar and battery systems into the grid. The deck is completely stacked against those decentralized sort of community scale projects in terms of the economics, but that doesn't need to be that way. I think that if we put all of those variables on the table, there's a lot of opportunity to create, to allow these communities to become active participants in clean energy resources going forward. And that's what we're trying to achieve.
You know, my little electric co-op in Colorado, if you can save a kilowatt hour, if you can shed a kilowatt hour during peak periods, they'll pay you up to a dollar a kilowatt hour. So
right,
it's all that transactional value that can be created. And I love what you're saying about giving everybody the opportunity to participate. And this Advanced Energy Community Project is funded now and is going to be built. Is that right?
Yeah, we have the grant from the Energy Commission. We have various private sector partners, and so yeah, we're optimistic that by a year from now we're going to have we'll be under construction on the community solar part of the project, and that will be in partnership with the Clean Power Alliance. And we will be in the implementation phase for the rooftop solar and battery storage with the advanced energy homes. We already are final, and we will finalize the resiliency hub as well as the various EV chargers that we're installing as a part of the project. So yeah, it's been very frustrating because it's so slow. The implementation has been going slow because there are so many hurdles. We have learned so much about how difficult it is to do this type of project, and the landscape keeps changing as we go forward, right? In terms of what other funding is available to help leverage, you know, what some of those allowances for pricing and access to the grid are, and how they're changing. Our partnership with the Clean Power Alliance and sort of Edison in terms of interconnection issues. It's all a whole lot of moving parts, but we're really optimistic that we're figuring it out, and it's going to be a very, very positive outcome once we get this stuff built.
I can think of no one better equipped to handle all those challenges than you, Craig.
Well, thank you, Ted.
I'm sure there's been a few frustrating moments along the way, but what a great job you've done of, you know, when I worked with John Phillips, you know this, I mean, it was basically a tiny little office in Laguna Beach. He and one secretary named Sheila Bailey, who you and I both know well. And then I was number three person coming in. And by the time I left there, I don't know, we had about 20 people. And now you've turned the Energy Coalition over these past years into a real force in California. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you, Ted. And I'm really happy when we're able to work together with your company on projects, because there's a lot there is so much that needs to be done, and there's, you know, so little time to do it in. So yeah, we've got to all like work harder and smarter.
We do. How are you keeping balance? Somebody like you could get burned out pretty easily if not careful. If you're not careful. So I know when I met you, you were running every morning. That was a big part of your life, and I feel maybe your knees are not tolerating that anymore.
Yeah, I used to be an avid runner, and now I'm an avid walker. I can tolerate that. I'm embarrassed to say this, but maybe not. I've been playing golf since I was 8 years old, and I still do that. I try to do that, you know, once a week. Public courses, I can't afford the country club. And I have a lot of fun doing that. And I won't say that this is necessarily something that I find, you know, great sort of fulfillment from, but I do a lot of home improvement projects. We have our own home, and we have this rental property that has been this, you know, yoke on our necks, but now it's, you know, coming out from under. And actually, I'm working on, we yanked out the gas service to the duplex we own, and we're doing all electric. And that is an amazing story about how tough it is to do the right thing. Why is it always so difficult to do the right thing? This is like my mantra in life. I used to always say this in Santa Monica, because it creates a lot of headache. You got to learn a lot. The contractor community is not quite, you know, where they need to be, and cities permitting agencies are not where they need to be. I've been learning a lot just on my own, unrelated to the Energy Coalition, about how you actually retrofit residences to be a participant in this 100% clean energy economy.
That's really great. Well, I'm always impressed by you, Craig. You know, the hands-on stuff is something that I like too. And the fact that you are pounding nails and putting down floors on the weekends and working on heat pumps and stuff like that is we're very aligned in that regard. We've run a little bit over, and I really appreciate your time and your insights. Really, congratulations on all that you've done. I think that when I think about the city of Santa Monica, what you did there, now what you've done at the Energy Coalition, you've made some really big difference. You made a really big difference. And I'm with you. The climate crisis is right on us. We've all got to be working hard and in collaboration with each other. But thanks so much, Craig.
Hey, thank you, Ted. My pleasure. And we'll get it done one way or the other.